Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, formerly known as Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week is part one of our coverage of the 2013 CSUN conference. We'll be trying to highlight some of the announcements of products and software that was made there and talking with some of the people about their impressions to give you a feel for about what the conference was all about.
That was the 28th Annual International Technology and Persons with Disabilities Conference that was held the last week in February 2013 in San Diego, California. But first to our tip of the week. We'll be speaking with five people who attended the conference. This week's tip comes from one of them, Jennison Asuncion.
This was my eighth attendance and my seventh as a speaker. And it just every year, it's amazing for me. I like to meet with some of the folks who are there for the first time and people who are interested in accessibility. They're just starting to get their feet wet. And I want to reassure all of your listeners that there are so many people out there. It might not seem that way when you're going around on the web and you're coming up against so many inaccessible websites and such, but there are so many dedicated folks who are just starting out now, and they are so enthusiastic about wanting to do good things, and they get the issues. Some of them are more complex than others, but for me, the week is always energizing as someone who firstly works in accessibility, but also who is also blind. It's a really great validation to me going to CSUN that I am working in an industry that for me is a great place to be right now. There's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of energy right now in the field.
And CSUN brings together thousands of people working in various assistive technology areas. There'll be new product announcements. There's an exhibit hall where you can see some old products and different things that are being sold, and there are also many technical and non-technical presentations.
And of course, Jennison's whole point is there was so much exciting new work being presented and so many enthusiastic new and not so new researchers in the field that if you think you have a little bit of a problem accessing something, well, you should be optimistic because there are some great minds working on fixing those problems.
And it's a great place for meeting and collaborating with colleagues from around the world.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll talk a little bit about the conference in general, but let's start by meeting the five attendees who were kind enough to let us interview them about CSUN. So here they are in alphabetical order.
My name is Jennison Asuncion. I work in digital accessibility for one of Canada's major banks. And when I'm not doing that, I do a lot of evangelism with the mainstream design development and usability communities.
I'm Sina Brahm. I'm a PhD student at North Carolina State University in the Department of Computer Science.
Hi, I'm Betsy Bowman, and I'm the VP and General Manager of the Literacy Program at Benetech, and that is the program that runs Bookshare, the Diagram Center, and Route 66 Literacy.
My name is Larry Lewis, and I am the president and founder of a company, Flying Blind LLC.
I'm Jonathan Mosen, and I'm vice president of Blindness Hardware Product Management for Freedom Scientific.
Now, of course, all five of them have either appeared on this show previously or will be appearing in separate episodes very soon.
As usual, those will be in the show notes associated with this episode of Eyes on Success. Just go to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net, look for this show, and click on the show notes.
So you may be wondering, based on the introduction, why a conference that's called the International Technology and Persons with Disabilities Conference would be abbreviated as CSUN. Well, the answer is that it is organized by the California State University at Northridge, and people have just taken to referring to the conference by the name of the university. And just to give a little flavor of what this conference is about, I pinched this from their website, and it says, for 28 years, the CSUN Center on Disabilities, through the International Conference on Assistive Technology and Persons with Disabilities, has provided an inclusive setting for researchers, practitioners, exhibitors, end users, speakers, and other participants to share knowledge and best practices in the field of assistive technology. In 2012, the conference drew more than 4,800 people to San Diego. Known as a forum that showcases cutting-edge technology and practical solutions that can be utilized to remove the barriers that prevent full participation of persons with disabilities in educational, workplace, and social settings, the conference is the largest of its kind in the world. Well, everybody came home exhausted, but apparently it was worth it. Here's Sina Baram.
So CSUN must have been a lot of fun. You actually sound a little bit tired.
Oh, my God. I think I slept 8 hours since Tuesday of last week.
In a week?
Yeah, in a week.
You didn't catch up on the plane at all?
Well, I had some work to do on the red eye home, so I dozed in between a couple of emails. It was good, though. It was fantastic, actually.
So let's see what that conference is all about and why it might have been so exhausting for people who attended it.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is some of the hot new things seen at CSUN.
One of the product announcements that was made at CSUN this year was the Seeing Eye GPS app from Sendero. This product is not yet available, but will be in a few months. And at that time, we'll be doing a special show dedicated especially to that application.
One of the people we spoke with about the conference was Betsy Bowman, who already introduced herself as being a vice president at Benetech. And she gave a presentation at the conference about Bookshare. And she very kindly gave us a brief summary. So let's hear what she had to say.
This is a very cool topic and gets to some of the newest work we're doing. It brings in the work of our Diagram Center, as well as just our overall push, and the whole center point of it was to say that everything born digital should be born accessible, because you know now the book business is moving away from, oh yeah, maybe I have it in a digital file, but it's all about the print. You know, more and more, it's becoming all about the digital book or the digital online course. And so our whole talk, and this was with our partners from the Diagram Center, George Kircher and Larry Goldberg, as well as folks we're working with from the commercial publishing and distribution world, Rick Johnson from Ingram VitalSource and Doug Klein from Barnes & Noble, to really give an end-to-end view of where are we now? So if our dream is that everything born digital should be born accessible, what are some of the key areas and how can that actually be achieved and where are we as we stand right now? So what's going well? What needs more work? It's an exciting time and an exciting place. And CSUN is such a great place to talk about this because we have quite a mix of people in the audience. You know, at CSUN, you get people who are assistive technology makers, and we want this message to get to them to say, hey, support these file formats. Support really robust image descriptions. Don't just support alt text. And, you know, there are some content creators and content producers that come to CSUN these days as well. And having just done that, a very similar presentation a couple weeks before at the Tools of Change conference that O'Reilly puts on in New York. That is a whole room full of content creators, publishers, you know, all the big guys are there looking for where do we go from here. So this is a mix of, hey, here's the theory, but also here's the practice. We developed working with the International Digital Publishing Forum, which George Kircher is also the president of their board. we worked with them looking at the work that had been done around how to make EPUB 3 files accessible, and in fact took some of our own in-house experience that we've had with Bookshare and helped kind of come up with sort of a tip sheet that we're making available so that everybody can kind of see, okay, if I can only think of 9 things that are going to make my content accessible in my books, what are those things that I most need to keep in mind? And then Matt Garish, who has written a whole book about accessible EPUB 3, you can deep dive and go into his wonderful guidelines on the IDPF website as well as his book. But, you know, we find publishers ask us all the time how to do this. And then the people who are making the reading tools are all saying, okay, what is it that I need to support? So we started this last year kind of saying we have to talk to all ends of this. The other piece at CSUN is, of course, the users, and to be able to talk with also users who kind of hear, this is the stuff that's coming. This is what you need to ask for. If you're at a school and you're buying books, ask for this stuff. Don't just accept whatever somebody sends you. So it's really that whole circuit.
What are the biggest barriers? I mean, you mentioned 9 things, but are there 1 or 2 that are kind of predominant in making this born digital, born accessible project come to a good ending?
I think it's an evolution. And one of the things we talked about is that there is the bar today and the bar tomorrow, and that bar keeps going up, as it should. If you remember back to when Bookshare started, the idea that somebody could have, you know, accessible digital text that a number of different tools could read, that's really cool. Well, it's more cool for a lot of people with print disabilities to also, if they're images, to have image descriptions. And, you know, we've accepted that we have a lot of math books out there that don't actually have math voiced because it's been, you know, overwhelmingly difficult to get that done and ridiculously expensive. But what we've talked about is we've got to raise that bar. So I'd say there's such an evolution in the publishing business right now that even some of the text stuff from a commercial source has accessibility concerns. So we are still talking about things like you can make something called, you know, fixed layout or fixed format EPUB 3, but please use real text, use reflowable text, don't make it a big picture. One of the issues over the years has been PDF. And, you know, that's a picture of a page, essentially, in most cases. So this could be the same thing. So a lot of people think, oh, EPUB 3, it'll just solve everything. Well, unfortunately, it won't do it automatically. So we still have concerns about the text, but we kind of hope that's going to be solved. So now we're really focusing on areas around things like images and math, because those are areas that publishers haven't traditionally done as much with, if anything. And it takes some extra work, could take some extra money. So anytime, you know, we know that there's something that's going to cost a commercial entity more, we've got to make sure that we're clear on the value. So I think it's those areas are the challenges. I've been pleased with, you know, we got a lot of people listening. This is great, you know, at Tools of Change and CSUN to have audiences who really care about this and are the people who can do something about it. That's what's gratifying. You know, we want to see our stuff get used. Our tools from the Diagram Center being open source, even if somebody, for example, doesn't actually implement our Poet image description tool in their publishing workflow, you know, they can take the code and meld it into their own system, or they can even just see, oh, well, this is an idea. I see that this is workable. Now let's think about where in our process this is going to happen. And part of what we talked about at CSUN was around, you know, there are different places in the process that accessibility can happen, and it may not just be all in one place. It may be, you know, some of it at the content authoring level, and some of it done, a lot of digital manipulation is done with files by people like Ingram and Barnes & Noble, believe it or not, so way after the actual author and publisher. So, you know, what can they do to also ensure accessibility of those final files? You know, we found that's an extremely good place to be targeting some accessibility discussions.
And if you want to hear more about some of Bookshare's new initiatives and what specifically they're doing nowadays, you'll want to hear the interview we'll be doing with Betsy in show 1318.
And now here's Larry Lewis from Flying Blind.
So touchscreen technologies have become pretty ubiquitous these days. What more did you see at CSUN this year in that regard?
I did meet with the company who launched a product that provided very simplistic access to the Android operating system. And it's an Israeli-based company called Project Ray, R-A-Y. Their whole mission is to provide access, you know, we all love our iPhones and so forth, but the Android operating system will work on phones that are quite a bit cheaper than your iPhone. This company wanted to take some of the complexity out of Android, but make a very simple touchscreen user interface for these lower cost handsets. So it'll be interesting to see how this company gets on with marketing this type of technology, because Apple's done such a great job and now Google has done such a good job with Jelly Bean and some of the touchscreens that are out there. This handset, for instance, it was just a basic Android handset with this speech output user interface on it. You know, you would pretty much find the center of the screen and leave your finger there as things scrolled, and you'd lift your finger off of it when you wanted something. So it was a little easier than trying to find things and memorize 1, 2, 3, 4 finger gestures. It was a much more simplistic approach that I actually think has a lot of value for a certain market segment who might not want all the bells and whistles of the iPhone.
Some people get overwhelmed with the complexity and how to use these devices. So I think simpler can be better for certain people.
The touchscreen will not go away. All these devices are moving to touchscreens. The days of the simple T9 dial pads are gone. So we have to deal with these touchscreens, and they've developed a pretty clever way of doing all that you need to do with Android simply by using the center of the screen in very basic single finger movements, lifting your finger up when you're supposed to. That was fairly new, fairly interesting, and where I see a need is out there for sure.
Well, it's good to know there are some solutions for those folks that aren't as technically savvy as some of us might be.
Now, Freedom Scientific has a whole array of great products. Jonathan Mosen, can you tell us what you'll be showing at CSUN?
We have a number of presentations at CSUN 2013, including a look at JAWS 14 and what's new, in case people would like to see some hands-on with that and just how the features work. I'm involved in a couple of presentations with Ron Miller on the hardware side about our Focus series, because I know we've talked about the Focus Braille displays before. Now we have a Focus 80 Braille display with Bluetooth support. So that's the Focus 80 Blue.
I assume that's an 80-cell display?
That's correct. Yeah, 80 cells of Braille.
Wow, that's pretty big and pretty impressive.
It's nice. You know, it's long, but it's still got that wonderful form factor of the Focus series. So it's a lovely product. And we'll be showing that with a range of mobile technologies. So we'll talk about how you can use a Focus display to get the job done in a range of settings. So it could be mobile with your Android or iDevice with a desktop or laptop computer. So, and we'll talk also about reading ebooks and other material with the Focus series, because there's so much printed material now, you can get an electronic form. And we'll also, of course, feature OpenBook and Magic. So there's a wide range of presentations on all of our key products at Freedom Scientific.
So I also understand that now that the new Apple operating system is out, iOS 6, the Focus 14 ought to be able to work with an iPhone. Is that right?
That's right. Because the Focus 14 is a new product, it is new to iOS 6, and it's working wonderfully with iOS now.
Turning now to Sina Baram from North Carolina State University, where he's a graduate student, he's also working on some real-world products and projects. Sina, can you tell us a little bit about one of those?
One of the exciting things that I was doing this CSUN was helping to demo the Talking TI-84 Plus calculator. APH, American Printing House for the Blind, and iOrbit Research got together and have modified a TI-84 scientific graphing calculator to talk. And so this is pretty exciting. I've been helping with some of that as a consultant, and I had the prototype with me all week. So a lot of people have been getting a kick out of that, because it's just it's a handheld, accessible graphing calculator.
That's pretty exciting. Is this in the regular TI box, or did they do something special to package it?
It's the regular TI box with another box on top. Where the data ports are, imagine a deck of cards.
I assume it speaks any of the equations. How does it convey the graphs?
It uses sonification. So let's say we have the equation y equals x squared minus 5, right? So it's just a parabola shifted down 5 values, right? Or centered at the origin. Some might call that a U shape. Well, the way you would sonify that from left to right would be And now if we have a sine wave, like, for example, we could go, right? My voice is hoarse. I can't do this as good as I usually can. Or if we have like y equals x, it's just, right? And so if you have a little bit more context, you can actually get valuable information from that kind of sonification. For example, we can go ding every time you pass the cross the y-axis, so you know where your zero crossings are. And similar with the x-axis, we can also go shh, like static sounds when you're negative. So as you're hearing view, as that tone is playing, you're also hearing shh for the negative portions to center your mental image about where the graph is negative and what it looks like.
So were you a beta tester for this, or did you actually help with the software?
I was originally a beta tester, but because my PhD is in this kind of stuff, I started making too many suggestions. And so I kind of got into the, well, why don't we do this phase? And so I'm consulting with them now and just helping with a lot of testing, a lot of ideas on how to use. This thing has haptic motors inside of it. And so we can use that. We can use stereo. There's just a lot of things we can do. And I've done a lot of work with other companies on math accessibility, like Design Science. So I've thought about this problem for a while, and there's some neat solutions out there that we can incorporate into this product.
And we can definitely attest to the fact that this product generated a lot of excitement. We heard about it from almost everybody we talked to.
Yeah, they're hoping that this product will be available this coming school year. And at that time, Sina agreed to do another interview with us, and we'll dedicate another Eyes on Success show to the functions and demos of this calculator.
So with all that excitement from the product you were showing, what products did you see from other people that generated some excitement for you?
There was a neat session about drawing in an eyes-free way. So that means that you use a force feedback device. And by using this force feedback device, you basically hold a pen in your hand. This pen is attached to an arm, if you will. And this arm has several degrees of movement, up, down, left, right, back, forth. Turn. So it has a lot of movement. Okay. There's a lot of like hinges and stuff, if you will. And then as you move the pen in any direction using a computer program, I can offer resistance. Okay. I can make it not want to go that way. And if you think about that, you can model the physical world in that way. In other words, if I tell you move your hand forward and you hit a wall, another way of saying that is the wall is preventing you from moving forward. And your brain doesn't really make a difference there, right? So why have that something there? Why instead not just prevent the thing that you're holding from going forward and give you the illusion that there is something there? That's what force feedback devices are. What this project was on was using this to give folks a virtual sheet of paper, you know, that you could feel, maybe like, let's say a thick sheet of paper or rubber. And you could then using the pen draw on this sheet of paper, but you're blind, so you don't get visual feedback. You get tactile feedback. You also get audio feedback. It would announce some of the shapes you were drawing. There was a speech component.
I can understand how this kind of pushing force field feedback is going to prevent you from going off a virtual sheet of paper or prevent you from going through a virtual sheet of paper. I'm having trouble understanding, like, if I think I want to draw a tree, what's this device going to do for me?
Well, then let's figure that out. So if you want to draw a tree, one of the things that you could do is get a regular sheet of paper, and you could get a rubber mat to put underneath it, and then get a little sharp instrument. And as you draw, it would well up, right? Let's do that here. Why don't we allow you to draw, and you're getting feedback as you're drawing. And then when you lift your pen up, you can use that same pen to feel what you just drew. Because it slots right into the slot, and you can follow the lines of what you just drew.
Oh, so it helps you remember what you put on the page, essentially, so you know what you put on the page. So you can draw relative to what you've already put there.
Exactly. So let's say you want to draw a circle, and you don't know if you've completed the ends of the circle. It's very easy to figure that out. Or a square, for example. You can tell that one of the edges is lopsided because you can take the pen, it'll slot right into the thing because there's a couple of modes. One is indent, one is outdent, if you will, and emboss. And so as you're following the line drawing that you just made, you'll notice, oh, wait, this isn't very straight, right? Because my arm is zigzagging. So you can correct that.
Clever. And I assume they have some ways of erasing or redoing something you did.
And even helping you out a little bit, if it knows you want to complete the square, it can help with that a little bit.
for this week's high-tech item. What's coming up in screen reader technology? And there's lots of it. So we'll start with Jennison Assuncion from what he refers to as a large bank in Canada.
One of the big highlights in terms of blindness products and that kind of innovations that did come up was WindowEyes, which is not a screen reader I use, but I know it's popular amongst folk who are blind. WindowEyes now is a lot more usable with what is called the Accessible Rich Internet Application Specification, or ARIA. What ARIA does is it enhances the accessibility of some of this new rich internet experience that's being brought out on the web. And there's been a bit of a challenge to make that stuff accessible, but ARIA provides more information to the different screen readers. And now this includes WindowEyes. So it's been supported in JAWS for a while. But I know that the folks behind WindowEyes have been working really hard to provide that level of support. That was one of the big messages that came out of the conference, that now there is a level of support for these rich internet applications with WindowEyes.
So that's interesting. My simplistic understanding of ARIA is that it's a method for using applications that are built into the web experience itself rather than a separate application. Is that right?
You got it. They call those rich internet applications is what they call them. What they're trying to do is mimic a Windows desktop experience. Don't ask me why. And so they're using things like tab panels and things that you'd see more in Windows.
Right. So you might be running like a word processor from within your web application or a spreadsheet or something like
that. You got it. Making those things accessible is what ARIA brings into it.
Yeah, those have been pretty horrible for people using screen readers in the past.
Absolutely.
And now back to Sina Baram from North Carolina State University.
There was some updates. Apparently JAWS 15 is going to support gestures. I don't know too much more about that, but they are supposedly going to support gestures. I had a great time meeting with Mick from NVDA, the open source screen reader. We played around with something called the Motion Leap, which is a device I had with me that allows a computer to recognize gestures in 3D space by painting an infrared grid in the middle of the air, and then you can recognize your hand gestures. It's kind of like the Microsoft Kinect, but the size of a USB flash drive. And it's awesome. So he got a kick out of that because I wanted to work with him on writing an input module for NVDA so you could control your screen reader by just waving your hands in the air and by pointing to things on a virtual desktop. So we think we can probably knock that out in 50-100 lines of code. If I get some chance to write it, I want to get something out there so other people can hack on it, because I think that would be fun.
Now, that might be even more exciting than a tablet. Rather than touching the screen, you can just wave your arms, point your fingers, and control your computer.
Now, we didn't have hardly any information on JAWS in this segment, but we'll have Jonathan Mosen coming back in show number 1316 to do an entire show about new features in JAWS 14. And as Sina indicated, there was some talk from Freedom Scientific about what's coming up in JAWS 15, and we will ask Jonathan to come back when that product launches to do another entire show about what's new there. So there was lots and lots of exciting stuff going on at CSUN, and of course we couldn't fit it all in one show. We won't be able to fit it in two, but we're doing another part on what's new from CSUN next week, so come back for that.
And we're trying to give you a general assortment. As Nancy said, we can't fit it all in, but we tried to touch on some of the things you might not have heard of or might be particularly interested in.
As usual, if you missed any of the links or references to other shows, they're all in the show notes, which you can find at our website, which is www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, formerly known as Viewpoints, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook at Eyes on Success and on Twitter at _EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.